let me start from some recap from last time so we can refresh what we did and get it as a starting point for today. So we defined symplectic manifolds as manifold with a two form, which is closed and non-degenerate. And this, we define it quite generally as saying that the kernel of the flat map induced by this omega is injective. Well, is zero, so the map is injective. This implies in particular that the manifold P is even dimensional. Okay, then we saw the relation to Poisson manifolds. What is a Poisson manifold? Here I haven't given an explicit definition. So is a manifold equipped with a bivector, which is which has three properties. Is Q. It is a biderivation. So a parenthesis, if you want, a bracket between functions on the space, which is Q, a biderivation, which is obvious from the way it is defined, and the most important one is that it satisfies the Jacobi identity. Now we have a little result, which says that symplectic implies Poisson. And essentially the only non-trivial things we have to check is that one implies C. So closeness implies Jacobi. The rest are for free. Poisson manifolds, remark, there is no can be degenerate. Pi can be degenerate. For this reason, it's not true that Poisson implies symplectic unless pi non-degenerate. Now, one can ask, if I allow, for some reason, omega to be degenerate, do I get Poisson manifolds? You don't. You get two different generalizations. So, remark, omega degenerate is something called presymplectic. And this is different than Poisson. Different to Poisson. I don't know. I never know which preposition is, but different from Poisson. Okay, then we saw that we have, we defined symplectomorphisms as diffeos of the manifold of P, of our phase space, which preserve the symplectic structure, and infinitesimally, these are vector fields that preserve it in the sense that the derivative of the symplectic structure vanishes. Then we saw, we defined Hamiltonian vector fields. So these are symplectic vector fields. What is a Hamiltonian vector field, abbreviated to HVF, is a vector field such that there exists a function with the following property, that Ix omega is minus df of x. So this is called the Hamiltonian generator of x. And in the equivalence, one has that x is equal to this. Yeah. So not every vector field is a Hamiltonian, of course. And we will see that more or less, under some conditions, every symplectic vector field is actually a Hamiltonian. We will do this in a second. Before, I want to remark the following, that every Hamiltonian vector field is symplectic. And this is a very short proof. We derive omega. This is ixd of omega plus dix of omega. This is 0 because it's closed. This is minus df, and therefore this is d squared, which is 0. So this is a simple proof. Now we ask, is the converse true? When is the converse true? Okay, so let me start from here. Before doing that, one observation that I forgot the last time, remark, x Hamiltonian vector field, then fx unique up to constant. Why? Well, because one has that if there are two of them, and also equal to minus df2, we know that d of f1 minus f2 is 0, so they are the same up to a constant. Okay, now proposition. So if our phase space has a trivial topology, and more specifically, its first Derham cohomology is trivial, then symplectic implies Hamiltonian. What does this mean? So H1P, what is it? Is closed one forms modulo exact one forms. So the fact that it's trivial, this is how it is defined. So the fact that we say this space is trivial, it means that every closed form is exact, and therefore we find that Lx, so if H1 of P is trivial, then closed implies exact. And now we can use this fact to say, suppose this is our hypothesis, that this is symplectic. But this is what? Again, I use Cartan's formula over there. This is 0. So we know that Ix omega closed, therefore exact. And this we conclude, right? So if it is exact, by definition, it means that there exists a function such that that quantity is equal to the differential of that function. Questions? So this will be important. This little proposition will be, well, what did it? Yeah, this is useful because it says that unless we have a phase space with this with a non-trivial topology, then which has which is not simply connected, then essentially every simple ectomorphism is Hamiltonian, and therefore we those are easier to treat. They and we get oops. So this is the first result. The second result over there will be useful later today when we will talk about symmetries. So it will come back. Now I want to give another criterion to check if a vector field is Hamiltonian, and in a way that we will also get automatically a generator for it. So this is not of great mathematical interest maybe, but is useful in physical applications because often we are given more structure than what is there. So this is the following proposition. You remember the definition of a symplectic potential? Did I give it? Okay. So if there exists a symplectic potential theta, which means that omega is equal to d theta, such that Lx of theta is 0. So this is our hypothesis. And the symplectic potential is not unique, so it depends which one we choose a priori. Oops. Then what happens? Then x is Hamiltonian. And two, f equal ix theta is its generator. So this is, again, a very simple proof. Once again, we use Cartan's formula to express this condition. So here we recognize omega. And here we have f. And we're done. So in physical applications, we will see that it often happens that this is realized. That's why I'm mentioning it. If we start from a Lagrangian, as I suggested yesterday, we are given something that resembles a symplectic potential. In fact, it will be a presymplectic potential. And quite often, it will be invariant. In that case, we know automatically how to build the generator. And this will give us the neutral current or charge, depending if you integrate it. So in a way, this is a simple computational device in many situations of interest. A useful exercise at this point would be to look at. I haven't gone that far yet. Okay. So these. One more thing. One more theorem that we can prove before adding some structure is the following. So we have, let me call this the Poisson structure of omega,
as we always do.
Then we have the following. Omega x. So before remark, let me do it here. I can denote x as a Hamiltonian vector field if fx exists. Or I can say f it always in, so here is a conditional, whereas F always gives me a Hamiltonian vector field, right?
So depending on which way I go, I denote things differently. But given an X, there's an F sometimes. But given an F, there is always an X. So, because this is, right? Just this. So given F, I always can build the associated Hamiltonian vector field. OK, so this is the setup here.
So what we know is that if we contract omega twice with both, with two Hamiltonian vector fields, what we get is nothing else than the Poisson bracket between those two. So this is first result. Second result,
which is the more important one, which is essentially a consequence of this one,
is that if I take the commutator of two Hamiltonian vector field, I get another Hamiltonian vector field for the Poisson, for the function given by the Poisson bracket of the function.
So I leave the proof of this as an exercise. It is quite important because you have to use a lot of the structures that we discussed so far. So it's quite useful to apply it and see if you can prove it. So it's an exercise in manipulation of, or in Cartan's calculus, essentially, and using the definition properly. So if you are able to prove this, it means that you've understood a lot of what is above.
And if you have questions, of course, you can come see me.
The proof is even left as an exercise in the notes, so you will not find it. So here I want to draw a little diagram that I will complete later. So what we have is the following. Let me see if I want to.
So we have C infinity functions on P.
Oof. Why these colors?
C infinity of P is mapped to vector fields. And on here, I have
a bracket on this space.
Let me do it even bigger. C infinity of P with the bracket. And I have a map, which is this map that associates to a function its Hamiltonian vector field. And what I get on the other side is a vector field. And on the space of vector field, there is a Lie bracket, which is given by the Lie bracket of vector fields. What this is saying, this equation, which is extremely important, is saying that this map is a Lie algebra homomorphism. So it maps brackets on one side onto brackets on the other side. So of course, this is not surjective. There are more vector fields than Hamiltonian vector fields. But on the image, it is so Lie algebra . So the goal of today will be, after I've done a couple more things about this more general situation, is to add one third algebra, which is a Lie algebra of symmetries acting on my phase space, rotations, for example, and try to complete this diagram with an extra ingredient on top. So we will pause this for now, and we will come back to it later. This is the formula star. Okay.
like I said, what I wanted to say here. Okay, let me do a little example.
Is injective, right?
Is injective. Well, up to constants. Constants are in the kernel, right? Yeah. Thanks. That's a good point. So I want to give an example of this situation, of some of these ingredients, and in particular, we said that. So Zura last time asked, "Oh, what are these symplectomorphisms? They're a bit like Killing symmetry for gravity, or things that do not change the form of your metric, like of your symplectic structure. So they are like canonical gauge canonical transformations of the phase space. But canonical transformations are usually presented in terms of, oh, I have P's and Q's, so I'm in a Darboux situation where I have Darboux coordinates, and then there is a transformation of phase space that does not change that gives me another Darboux set of coordinates. So of course it's not changing the form of omega, in that way it's a symplectomorphism. But in general, there are diffeomorphisms that change the coordinate on phase space, do not preserve omega, but are still useful. That's the advantage of doing things in this geometric way. That is, you're completely free to choose the coordinate on phase space that you like. You don't need to use canonical coordinates. So a nice example of this is the following. Consider the Lagrangian of a particle q dot I q dot j minus ai q q dot I minus v of q. So these are fixed functions, fixed one form on q, and this is a fixed function on q. And this is my kinetic term. I'm putting the mass to 1, doesn't matter. So of course, we know that this is how the Lagrangian of a particle in an external electromagnetic field looks like. Right? So that's now, what one can do is to try to do the symplectic analysis of this. So what we, the standard one, so 1, what we do is to define p as dl over dq dot, and what we find here is delta ij q dot j minus ai of q. So this is a function of q dot and q. Now if I invert it and do my Legendre transform, I can compute the Hamiltonian. I skip a few steps. I'm sure we have done this exercise before. It's not so much the point to do this computation, but what we find is that this will give us pi plus ai of q, pj plus aj of q, plus b of q. So this is the canonical momentum, and as we know, this is not just the velocity of the part given by the velocity of the particle. There's this corrective term. Now, from this, I can compute the Hamiltonian vector field, which encodes the dynamics, which will have components xh q ddq and xh p ddp. And these are my q dot, and this is the p dot. So I can read off the dynamics from this vector field if I identify these components with the time derivative and the of p and q. So if I follow the flow of this vector field over my phase space, I'm reconstructing the dynamics of the system. Oh, OK. Now what I want to do is to do the following thing. What if instead of using P, I want to use Q dot in quotes as a new variable on phase space. So take phi, sorry, let's call it phi, that sends Q's and P's into, which way do I want to do it? Let's do it in this way. QP is sent to a new set of Q's and P's, where the Q are the old Q's and the P's are P plus A. In this way, if I do this transformation, it's like choosing Q dots as a momentum. Ah, sorry, of course, the important thing I haven't said is that if you do it like this, you get that the symplectic structure is the canonical one. These are the canonical coordinates, so they are the book coordinates on the phase space by construction. So this is, this was the important information. So, but if I do this diffeomorphism, I'm changing coordinate on phase space. And there's no problem in changing coordinate on phase space once I'm working with geometrical objects. So what is my new symplectic structure? What is my new, the problem is I should have done it, since this is goes the opposite way, I should do it, call this, excuse my change of course it's invertible, so I can define it whichever way I want. It's easier to do it the other way around. So I can take the symplectic structure on the Qs and P and write it in terms of Q of the new variable. So if I do this, what I find is something that is not canonical, dqi, is not in Darboux form, minus 1 half. And here I have bij of q, dq tilde, I wedge dq tilde j. So it's clear that this is not in a Darboux form. What is b? Well, bij is just dij minus dj ai in the q variables. And what is the new Hamiltonian? The new Hamiltonian is just p squared plus vq. So, and from these, I can compute my new vector field, which is the push forward of the old one, if you want. It's the other way around. And I will get the fact that if it must encode the same dynamics, because I'm just changing coordinates, I'm doing nothing. But you see what has happened. Now, the magnetic field, instead of being encoded in the Hamiltonian through A appearing here, and in terms of, we have canonical coordinates and we encode the presence of the magnetic field in the Hamiltonian, or we can describe the same dynamics differently by having an Hamiltonian, which is the actual energy of which is manifestly the energy of the particle. We have P tilde is, we see it from here, which is essentially Q dot. But we have moved the external magnetic field is in a non-trivial symplectic structure. So this is, I think, a nice exercise that shows how a bit the flexibility of the formalism, and also that there are different ways of thinking about the problem. I think, I hope I'm not saying something silly, but I think this way of thinking also helps understand the Landau quantization of the magnetic fluxes. Okay. Good. Okay, questions?
So, yeah. Sorry, maybe just a clarification. So what we did is we modified the canonical two form that we have on our phase space, and we got a nicer form of the Hamiltonian. Is that the sort of...
So you can think, what we did is we took the phase space that we constructed from the Lagrangian and chose different coordinates on this phase space. So but this is the same phase space as before, if you want.
Sure.
It's just a change in coordinates, and this is how the new phase space looks in the new coordinates. The symplectic structures looks like this, and the Hamiltonian will look like that. So by construction, I'm describing the same physics. If I look at the dynamics of Q, of how the particle is moving, I will find the same thing. You can also think of these as mapping, as having two different phase spaces on the same associated to the same phase space, P's and Q's, which and choosing two different Hamiltonians in such a way that the dynamic is the same. So there are these two possibilities. So what determines the dynamics is not just the Hamiltonian, it's also the phase space structure that I'm using. So it's the combination of the two. Or differently, you can think of these in terms of changes of coordinates instead of changing of structures, which is one is an active version, the other is like a passive version of the same. But they mimic each other, so they're complementary ways of looking at it. But in certain cases, you can just think, oh, I'm choosing new coordinates that will simplify my computations. Why not? I don't know if these will simplify your computations, to be honest, but it just gives you a different way of thinking of the magnetic potential. One nice thing maybe is that this does not involve A, which is not gauge invariant. Here, to discuss gauge invariance with respect to shifts of A, you have to work a little bit. Here is manifest in this formulation, because there's only B up here. That's a plus.
Sorry, is it obvious why that's a closed form?
Is due to the fact that B is exact. This B is dA. So if you... So d omega tilde is indeed zero. Okay. So we're ready to add some structure. So we talked, just to conclude, wrap up about dynamics. I'm not, the tutorial is about understanding how these flows over phase space encode the dynamics. So I'm not going to repeat that story here. But the thing I want to emphasize is that if I'm working, so in the tutorial, we're doing something more general. We are taking time as one extra coordinate of an enlarged phase space. One reason why this is interesting to do is because I can then treat dynamics that like time-dependent Hamiltonians, because now my time is a phase space coordinate, and so things can depend on it explicitly. Of course, the formalism is more complicated, but it works. So if I'm working in a setup like this, time is not part of phase space. It's just an external parameter along this that parameterizes my flows. So these are not really Q dots in any, there's no dot, t dependence except along the flow lines in phase space. So in this setup, I cannot really talk about systems with time-dependent Hamiltonians in this strictly symplectic setup. And one way to see it is that time evolution is the flow. Sorry, I should have written like this. Time evolution is understood as being the flow of this vector field, which is nothing else than the bracket of H. And therefore, it must preserve the Hamiltonian. Right? It's just the simplest computation possible. So we cannot have a time-dependent Hamiltonian. It's not possible to describe it like this. So in fact, if you work in the setup that I gave in the tutorial, and work and start thinking hard about what it means in the case of time-dependent Hamiltonians, you see that this description of time evolution is better understood as time translation symmetries. So this requires a bit of work. It's done at the end of the chapter one in the notes. I don't have time. It would sidetrack me too much. But the reason why time translation symmetry can encode dynamics, well, it says that if I consider two neighboring phase space points, which are related by time translation along the Hamiltonian flow with respect to each other. I should say it differently. Let's consider two histories, which are dynamical histories, which are time translated with respect to each other. Then, at a given time, at a fixed time, they correspond to two different phase space points. But they are along the same Hamiltonian flow. So this flow is actually moving. You can think of it as an operation that takes a history to a time-translated history, which is the same as time evolution in a system with conserved energy. So it's a bit of a mind puzzle, but there is a way of thinking of evolution as time translation symmetry in conservative systems. So this is just a segue into symmetries. Time translations is quite a complicated symmetry. There are easier symmetries, which are symmetries induced by a Lie algebra action. So this is what I want to talk about. But there is also a way to think about symmetries in this case of time evolution. I write it here as a slogan, evolution equal in geometry, H is conserved, H dot equals zero, and time evolution is actually time translation symmetry. And an Hamiltonian vector field is truly encoding a symmetry. That's where I want to get. So Hamiltonian vector fields encode symmetries. Now, whether these symmetries are physically relevant or not depends on, of course, which dynamics you choose. But as an idea, this is a starting point. And I will get to this distinction between kinematical symmetries and dynamical symmetries in a moment. Well, I can give it now, in fact. So definition, kinematical symmetry is a Hamiltonian vector field. We could say it like this. So in particular, is something that preserves my symplectic structure. So I just give you kinematical information. There's no dynamics. I just have the phase-space structure, something that preserves it. I can call it a kinematical symmetry. Whereas a dynamical symmetry is a Hamiltonian vector field that preserves the Hamiltonian. So, and there are different way of saying it. I can say that this is zero, but this is nothing else than, H. F of x h, but this is also in some, from the dynamical perspective, this would be f dot. So these are all equivalent conditions. So in particular, the generator of a dynamical symmetry is conserved. Now, I want to add more structure. This is super general. Any Hamiltonian vector field would work in here, but usually we're interested in something like rotations, which is associated to a group action. So this is the new topic. What is a Lie algebra action is the following. So I will, for now, always consider G a finite dimensional. We will later consider infinite dimensional Lie algebras, but for now it's finite dimensional. Real Lie algebra is with the bracket. So I didn't define it. What is a Lie algebra? I'm sorry. Is something that is Q, is something, is a vector space equipped with a bracket that is Q and satisfies Jacobi. So in particular, this is a Lie algebra. That's my vector space under addition of functions. And this is a vector space under addition of vector fields. And those are Q and satisfies Jacobi. So they're both Lie algebra.
Aldo, could you quickly say, like, why, so...
But they're infinite dimensional.
No,
I wanted to add that. Yeah.
In the first definition, the first implies second, or second implies the first?
Here? No, there are two different definitions.
Oh.
Independent. Here I have one more structure. There is, the second implies the... This is a strengthening of the first. This is a kinematical symmetry, so it's an Hamiltonian So here... I'm identifying the concept of Hamiltonian vector field with a kinematical symmetry.
Okay.
Just is a way to think about it. Is this slogan, Hamiltonian vector field encodes symmetries. But what is a dynamical symmetry must be compatible with the dynamics, which is given by your Hamiltonian, and therefore we obtain an extra condition.
And the second one is strengthening of the first one.
Yes.
So if I preserve H, I necessarily preserve omega.
Sorry. No. Here, I'm assuming that I have an Hamiltonian vector field.
Okay, I see.
That on top, that on top preserves.
Yes.
Preserves. And then, so I have a Lie algebra, and then I need to say what is an action. An action is a map from my Lie algebra onto vector fields. Over my phase space, over some space, in this case, phase space, which is a Lie algebra homomorphism. This is the condition that says what an action is. Okay, so this is the action. Is a Lie algebra with a map like this, which is a Lie algebra homomorphism. What does it mean? It means that, in particular, rho of the bracket is the bracket of the rows. And it also means, this is the importantest
it also means that this must be linear. But this is a bit more
obvious.
For a real psi eta in G.
So this is what this means. Preserves the linear structure and the bracket structure, which are the two structures that define what the Lie algebra is. Note, this is a bracket in G, and this is a bracket between the vector fields. Okay, so I'm adding one layer to this diagram now. So let me change the blackboard. Oops. So here, and this is what we want to study starting from today, I'm putting so G with its own bracket, and this is rho. This is another Lie algebra homomorphism. Now the question is, by definition, by construction, is what I'm defining as an action. The question is, what happens to this arrow? Can I close the diagram? Okay. What is, as an exercise to understand what this, what the action is, example, I can take P as T star of Rn with my P's and Q's. And I can define, take G to be, for example, translations, right? So what would this be? This would be a copy of Rn with, this is example one. So what is the action? The action is a vector field that acts on, at, let's say, at Q. I take a Lie algebra element psi. I evaluate it at Q and P. And this must be a vector field. What is this vector field? It translates the Q's. And does nothing to the P's. Right? And you can check that this satisfies those axioms. Since G is abelian, it's quite clear that the bracket between these two is zero because psi I is a constant.
So with epsilon we fix some basis elements, and it's like epsilon I basis elements, right?
Which epsilon?
In the example.
Oh no, here I'm saying that G is Rn. So yes, in a sense.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Because so epsilon I is the coordinate. Yeah.
Yeah. So these are constant because they are in Rn. And so this is zero. So it's obviously, it's also linear. There's very little to prove here. It's also linear and it's okay. So the second example, slightly more sophisticated. I want to take G equal to rotations. And these are what? Rotations are also parameterized by Rn, but their Lie algebra structure is the cross product over Rn, right? So in particular, I have that xi eta I give me xi cross eta I. This is, maybe it's not the way you usually write the algebra of rotations, but it's equivalent. This is epsilon ij k. Sorry. I should write it. I should write it like this. So this is an intrinsic way. If I want to take the k component of this, this would be epsilon k ij psi I theta j. Okay, so this is the algebra of rotation. So now, what do rotation do to your phase space? They rotate the Q, and they rotate the P's. So this is a much more sophisticated, compared to the previous one, example, because to check that the algebra is satisfied, it requires now a computation indeed, because this will derive itself. So we get a non-abelian algebra, which indeed satisfy check that rho xi rho eta is equal to rho of the product like that. Okay, but it's a computation that is not very hard. If you know how to compute a Lie derivative, it's a Lie bracket of vector fields is immediate. Might be a bit of index gymnastics with the epsilons as usual, but. Okay, questions? Okay, so this is what we call an action. Now, we have that another observation which is interesting is that this is finite dimensional, as we have seen. These are infinite dimensional. So this is a very small subset in here. So again, here I will find the small subset in there, which is fine. Then the question is also when this doesn't know anything about this doesn't know anything about the symplectic structure, whereas this one does. So here I've not yet talked about the compatibility of rho with my symplectic structure. So this I already expect that not every action has an arrow here that closes the diagram, right? It must be an action compatible with the symplectic structure. So this is where I want to go next. And I have probably just the time to give a definition. A little more definition. So we want P omega symplectic. We want rho g action on P. Or maybe g rho is makes a bit more sense. It's an action on P. Now, rho is said, well, rho admits a co-momentum map if the following happens. So there exists let's say it like this. If there exists a map J from G to functions over P, such that the following. So this is, of course, my co-momentum map. I rho xi of omega is equal to minus d of j of xi. So here I'm putting in this compatibility between my action and my phase space structure. I'm requiring, in fact, this is equivalent to asking that rho xi is Hamiltonian, right? So I will say it in a moment, but this is the same as asking that rho xi is Hamiltonian. So remark, rho xi, I will state the theorem that says the equivalence in a precise way. But this is the idea. Before saying the theorem, I want to spend a second on this co, because here I'm thinking of J as a map from G into the function. So this question mark here, if it exists, is this co-momentum map. It goes from G on into functions. It's useful to dualize it for many applications, to dualize this definition. So remark, rho xi is linear in xi, therefore j xi is linear in xi, because this equation must hold. So this is a super important equation. Therefore, what can we do? We can say that j must be equivalent to a function valued in the dual of g. So given j, check, there exists a j in, if you want, that goes from p. Let me write it like this. Is a map, is a function on p with values in g star, which is nothing else than a map from p to g star, with the following properties, that j xi evaluated at z is equal to jz pair with xi. So this is just and this is what we call the momentum map. So they're dual to each other, but they contain the same information. It's different ways of thinking about the same object, really. It's not two different objects, they're the same. So if we have this, we can write, and this is the last equation of today, which I rho xi omega equal minus d of j. Or more abstractly, if you want, you can think of it like that. And then there is an open slot here and an open slot there.
Could you remind what this pairing is?
Is the natural pairing between a vector space and its dual. Right? So here, is the natural pairing between G and G star. Sorry, G star and G. So is a map from G cross G star, sorry, G star cross G in my notation, into R.
Right? And so I will introduce the co-basis, and I will just GI, psi I.
So the dual space is the space of linear functions on on the vector space, and therefore there is a canonical pairing. You just evaluate the dual space on the function, and then you can. It turns out that that's also a vector space of the same dimension, and so on and so forth. So this is all. Usually, you don't even notice the difference between the two. But yeah.
Could you repeat like why diagram is commutative with this definition?
Yes. So to see that this diagram is commutative, what one needs to check is that this J gives me the so we start from Xi. Let's do it here. Xi, we go to this function, and what is the Hamiltonian vector field of Xi? Well, I check this equation, that equation over there, the green equation. The green equation tells me that this is precisely rho. So this is my star equation.
So why does it? So sorry.
Because J hat Xi.
Yeah.
J checks Xi is the Hamiltonian vector is the generator of rho. So vice versa, rho is the Hamiltonian vector field of J.
Okay.
So this is like saying that. Rho, so let me write it here. Rho Xi equal Hamiltonian vector field of J Xi. I should have written it there, but is the same. So next time we will check, give conditions when this happens, and then we will move on from there. So but this is the diagram. If you understand this diagram, you understand everything I said so far. Thanks.